Court will proceed to the third case of the day, the United States versus Andrews. Ms. Kister.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. Thank you, Mr. Miller. I'd like to limit my remarks this morning to the second point that I briefed, which is before the court, which corresponds to the 924C violation. And I would also add with respect to that count and the conviction on that count that this is where Mr. Andrews suffered drew the majority of his sentence. I believe he got 84 months for his conviction on the 924C count, and that was consecutive to the lesser time he did on the first count, which was the bank robbery count. Now, as the court knows, he wasn't merely charged with a 924C violation, which is use of a weapon in relation or in furtherance of a crime of violence or a drug offense. He was charged on a theory, and the government went forward on a theory of aiding and abetting a 924C offense. I'd submit to the court that they never proved that.
And so let's just get right to the heart of the question, because, you know, what difference does it make that Andrew supplied the getaway car rather than driving it? That's one question I have. And didn't he effectively provide, you know, transportation for the firearm? And under our case law, that would be facilitation?
Well, he did, in fact, provide what turned out to be the car that transported the principal and the cohort of the principal.
With guns.
With guns,
which
or a gun.
About.
Yes, to commit the bank robbery. I'd submit, however, that the act of providing the car was not done with a specific intent of furthering the use of the weapon. And I believe that there has to be that direct involvement in the use or that direct intention of furthering that use. It wasn't a case, and this would have been much different, had Rusty James and his cohort said to Mr. Andrews, we have a weapon, we want to take the weapon when we stick up the bank, but we don't have a car, and we need to have a car to get it there because it's cumbersome, or we need to conceal it in a car, and we either don't own a car or flat tire on the car, we need your car to get that gun there. In fact, they had a car. And I think that's an important fact in this case. They were going to drive themselves there with their car or his car. They wanted his car because I believe, and I think the record supports this inference, they figured if anybody sees us, it'll be his car that they see and his car that they identify. They go beyond that. They take his shoes with them. And I think that's for the same purpose. They don't want to be identified. We do know from the record, I believe we can infer from the record that it was snowing that day, and we know that from the testimony of the police officers when they hopped up on the fence later at Mr. Andrews' house. They got an umbrella because it was snowing, and there were snow showers, and the remnants of the paper were burning on the grill. Well, these guys, in going to the bank, didn't want to take their own shoes. I guess. So as not to leave footprints in the snow. There's no other reason why they asked Mr. Andrews for his shoes and his car. I'd submit to you that what we can gather from all this is that Mr. Andrews was suckered. He was this hapless guy, and they wanted his car to conceal their own identities. He gave them the car. He didn't do it to assist them in taking the guns or using the guns. And I think we can also find from the record that he didn't know before they met up, just moments before the bank robbery took place, where they were at an apartment complex or something. He didn't know up until that moment that there were even going to be guns involved, because he says in his own interrogation, I saw those guns and, you know, I kind of jumped back and, oh, man, you know, they got all these guns. And it was scary for him. He didn't bring the car there so that they would have a car to transport that weapon to the scene and use it. And I would submit that if all he did, and in fact all he did, was give them a car Probably because he was dim enough not to figure out that, you know, it wasn't advancing his own interests any to do so. It's not enough on an aiding and abetting liability theory for a 924C violation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kister. Mr. Miller?
Please report, counsel. My name is David Miller. I'm the assistant U.S. attorney that tried this case. With respect to the issues that were raised with regard to issue number two, the knowledge that Mr. Andrews had, Mr. Andrews gave several stories, and in those stories, he had indicated that he had met this Rusty James, who we never were able to find in any indices that there was a person named Rusty James. There was an FBI agent named Rusty Loran that was a part of this case, but there was no Rusty James that could have been identified in any indices that we ran trying to locate that individual. But he met this elusive person a couple of weeks earlier at the American Legion, and they talked about robbing a bank. And his defense initially was, well, you know, I knew they were going to do this, and I went with them about 2 weeks before the actual robbery took place. I met them at the apartment complex, but I really didn't think they were going to do it. They went, according to him, they went to the complex, they met, the robbery didn't take place for whatever reasons. So he gets a call on the 28th day of November, I believe, and to meet him at the place. The place was the apartment complex. He meets him at the place. It was not snowing. It was raining. It was misting. It was damp. Outside the record, we had, with regard to the shoes, we had had a number of prosecutions where we were able to get footprints and compare those footprints and make a prosecution based on that, and perhaps that's the reason why he wanted the shoes. But he went, he met with them, and he says, when they came, he saw that they had the guns, and that they, when they got out of the car, they had them on them, and they had them in their hands when they got out of their car, and they got in his car, and they left. They went, and they robbed a bank. They then came back to the same spot, which was the apartment complex, and they made the switch from the red car to the white car. And Mr. Andrews then got in the red car, and he drove away. The record shows that while the detectives were doing the investigation, the manager of the credit union heard a reference to a red car. They had previously, 2 weeks earlier, seen that red car circling the building. A previous manager in the summer had written down a partial plate. They got that information.
And I know you have more to tell of the story, but can we get back to what, in your view, of the outline? I know you said he saw the guns in the car. So in what way do you think the evidence shows he encouraged the use of the firearm? Was it just merely saying, you can use my car? You know, isn't this a different situation? He was not driving the getaway car like in Woods. So, you know, what exactly?
He facilitated the use of the guns by allowing the defendants to get in his automobile, a red car, go rob a bank, and leave from that credit union in a red car with those guns, switch cars. They get in a white car. He stays in the red car. There's no guns that Mr. Andrews has. Any guns that they had going into the bank were in the white car, or, as he said in his statement, there were a number of guns that they had, some left in the car. All those guns went in a white car. The police come, they're looking for a red car, not a white car. The red car's found. There's no guns in that red car. They're all in a white car that the defendants or the perpetrators that we never caught escaped in. He facilitated the use of the guns going to the bank robbery. He facilitated the escape, which is a part of the bank robbery, with the guns, and they were able to elude capture. And the information that he provided with regard to an unknown individual and an individual named Rusty James provided no information to law enforcement regarding the identity of these individuals, and they were able to escape with over $100,000 in bank funds that was never recovered. So we think that his knowledge prior to the actual date of the bank robbery, 2 weeks earlier, that they were going to do it.
So then, in other words, you're saying that the getaway car can not only be just, you know, the driver waiting to drive them away, but because of this gun transfer, that helped them, quote, get away.
Yes, ma'am.
So you would say you fall within the purview of Woods.
Yes, ma'am. That's the government's position, that he facilitated the use of the guns by providing the automobile to rob the bank and for them to get away in a red car, switch it to a white car, and they left, and they haven't been caught to this day. The court has no other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Ms. Kister?
Very briefly.
I think this case is distinguishable from the Seventh Circuit case, I believe it's Medina, where there were two getaway cars, and the accomplice procured a second car from his girlfriend so that there would be two cars at the bank leaving the scene, one of which could transport away from the scene the gun. He knew there was going to be a gun. He was part of that plan. He went so far as to make sure there was a means for disposing of that weapon. That ties him to the use of that weapon in that case. I don't think we have that here. I think we have a hapless individual who didn't know in advance, and there's nothing in the record to suggest that he knew in advance that these guys were going to bring a gun at all to commit this robbery. They swap cars. He doesn't know why he's swapping the car, but I would submit it wasn't to assist them in transporting that gun there or disposing of any of the weapons after the fact. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kister. Thanks to both counsel. Ms. Kister, the court would like to extend an additional thanks to you for accepting the appointment in this case and ably representing the defendant.
Thank you. Pleasure.